It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Sandy Rios with you this morning, and as we are learning, it is becoming more and more difficult to be a conservative and especially a Christian on college campuses. Just a few weeks ago, we played for you a clip of a law professor from the University of San Diego named Gail Harriet, who testified here in Washington, D.C. before a committee on the whole notion of transgenderism, transgender bathrooms, orders by the Education Department to education school boards around the country to open bathrooms and changing facilities to children according to their gender identity. Gail Harriet's an expert on this, and she's testifying before Congress. And Congressman Zoe Lofgren from California steps in, and you have to hear the interaction to understand the incredible disrespect. You're going to hear the voice of Zoe Lofgren, the congresswoman from California. Then you'll hear the voice of University of San Diego law professor Gail Harriet interrupting. Let's listen.
I'll just say this. You know, I don't usually call out witnesses, but here's what the written testimony says. And this is Mrs. Harriet. We are teaching young people a terrible lesson. If I believe that I am a Russian princess, that doesn't make me a Russian princess, even if my friends and acquaintances are willing to indulge my fantasy. Nor am I a great horned owl just because, as I have been told, I happen to share some personality traits with those feathered creatures. I've got to say, I found this rather offensive. And it says to me that the witness really doesn't know anything and probably has never met a transgender child who is going through, in almost every case, a very difficult experience finding themselves. And I believe that the department's guidance will help schools all over the United States in preventing the kind of violence and harassment that these transgender kids find too often. So that's all I'm going to say on that. You know, I think it's very regrettable that that comment was put into the record, and I think it's highly offensive. Now, I'd like to ask you a question, Mr. Knox.
Well, could I comment on that, please?
No, it's just my opinion.
I think you'll find that many people find it very offensive that the Department of Education
I think you're a bigot,
that
lady.
They can be
I think
the,
you're ignorant
tell schools
bigot.
All across the country
I think you are an ignorant bigot and anti
Gentlelady from California will suspend. You're out of order.
She's out of order.
We don't
order.
Call
my
names
time,
in this
Mr.
committee,
Chairman.
And you'll not be recognized to do that.
Mr. Chairman, it is my time, and I would just like to say that we allow witnesses to say offensive things, but I cannot allow that kind of bigotry to go into the record unchallenged. Now, I don't want to get into a debate about
Does
it.
Does that mean you think I am a Russian princess?
I have no idea.
Isn't it interesting to hear the Congresswoman? Now, this is in the House, the United States House of Representatives, which at one time treated people with respect, even in disagreement. So here's Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren acting so now. I'm just concerned about the children. This is just not going well. I want to express my concern. And then when Professor Harriet tries to explain what she's saying, the real Zoe Lofgren comes out. You're an ignorant bigot, lady. I believe that's disrespectful and outside of protocol, but that is the derision with which academics, no matter their qualifications, are facing if they hold values and principles and beliefs that are contrary to what's acceptable on college campuses. Well, no one would know that better than my next guest. His name is Robert Oscar Lopez, better known as Bobby Lopez. If you listen to this show, you've been hearing Bobby on this show for several years. He has a BA in political science, an MA in the classics, a PhD in English. He's been up until recently a professor at Cal State Northridge, but recently, in a very dramatic move, gave up his tenure there, which we're going to talk about. But first, let me just say welcome, Bobby, to the show today. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure to speak with you, so I appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure too, Bobby. Let me just say that Bobby's written several books, a couple of books, and one of them was The Colorful Conservative, American Conversations with the Ancients from Wheatley to Whitman. He loves literature. He is a great writer. He has his own blog called EnglishManifBlogspot.com, which is an international blog, which we'll get into. And his most recent book, which is a compilation of the shared story of him with other friends of his who were raised by gay or lesbian parents, which is called Jephthah's Daughters, Innocent Casualties of the War for Family Equality. He was the editor on that book. So I just wanted to kind of give you an idea who Bobby is. Bobby, let's talk. When I first heard of you, I'm not even sure the year. I just remember the occasion very clearly because Dr. Mark Gregory from University of Texas, I believe, did a pretty significant study on the effect of someone growing up in the home of gay or lesbian parents. And you, living out in California, having been raised by a lesbian mother who you love very much, began to speak openly about that. That's when it all began, isn't it?
Yes. Prior to that, I was experiencing a lot of backlash at my university because I was in the Army Reserve and because I was Republican and because I had defended Sarah Palin publicly. But it was really that sequence of events in the summer of 2012 when I came forward and made it public that I had been raised by a lesbian mother and that some of my experiences and the experiences of people that I knew matched the statistics in Mark Regnerus' study, so that Regnerus' study was not simply something random or completely outside the bounds of what was reasonable. That sequence of events escalated things, and it alienated some administrators who, prior to that, were inclined to be protective of me. So at that point, I think that was when the dominoes started to fall, and it really, you know, it was going to be difficult for me to remain there, but I did hang on for four more years.
Yes, so. And I want to talk about that progression because I think it's a fascinating, I guess I've watched from afar. I have seen you go through this, Bobby, from afar and watch the progression, and it is a pretty dramatic story. And I know it's fresh for you, but I want us to talk about this. When Dr. Regnerus published, I always say Regnerus, but when he published his study, right away he got such blowback. Here he is, a researcher with a great reputation, University of Texas, and there are all these things come out to disparage his findings. Do you know what happened to him as a result of that? I know it was a difficult time.
He's still in his position. I think one of the things that happened is that University of Texas at Austin, which employs him, is in a different academic tier from Cal State Northridge, which employs me. I'm just going to be very blunt with you. So because he's at a prestigious research institution, I think he got a lot more support from, you know, people on our side. There was a lot more attention to it, whereas because I was teaching at a state college that is really much more geared towards teaching rather than research, I was given help from time to time, but there was really, I wasn't a high priority for them. So that's why I think Regnerus and I ended up with two very different outcomes. You know, he's still, I think, doing well and flourishing at Austin.
Yeah. So. You know, Bobby, part of your story, just to remind people, and your story is very dramatic, is that you, because of your upbringing, again, by a mother that I remember talking to you not long, you were very emotional the first time we talked about this because you loved your mother so much and you actually hesitated to speak out. You did not want to make her feel badly, but you were trying to be honest about the detrimental effects. You talked about your own sexual confusion. I think you described yourself initially as bisexual, I think.
Right, yes.
Yeah. But you were straight, now married with children. You have a different life. And I think, don't you think that part of the reason you became such an object of hatred was because you are much more of a threat? I think I don't know if you can put yourself in the category of ex-gay men, but the ex-gay men that I know really are hated, really and truly hated.
Yeah, they do target people who are from within the community who know them. The people who have been closest to them are the ones that they see as the biggest threat. And they come after you much more viciously, and they do it through means that are much more personal, much more vindictive. So I did speak with some of the other conservatives who have gotten blowback, but none of them had some of the things that happened to me. So, for instance, they tried to put porn links in emails to get me to link on these links that didn't look like they were porn links, but if had I linked to them, they would have downloaded cookies onto my work computer. And that's a way that people often get fired, is by having pornography on their work computer, you know? So I knew that that was part of a coordinated effort to try to get me out. And they contacted my family members. They contacted my, you know, my brother and sisters. They contacted friends and things like that. So when you're ex-gay, or when you're someone who came from the gay community, or someone who's close to them, and you can speak with that kind of authenticity, they do come after you with much more of a personal vendetta. It's almost like love turns to hate so quickly. You know, you were one of them, and now you are an apostate, or you're a traitor. And so they're not going to do to someone like Robert George or Ryan Anderson some of the really, truly vicious things that were done to me at Northridge.
Well, I also think that your existence disproves the thing that they tell themselves, that they cannot help, that they were born that way, their behavior is inevitable. You know, it's like,
right,
and that I can't help myself. And so someone like you, and like Steve Bennett and others that, whose names I could rattle off, Chris, yeah, I can't rattle off, huh? But there are several outspoken ex-gays. And you are a threat in that way, because as long as you are successful at living as a heterosexual man, you are just a terrible threat to even their conscience, I think, Bobby. And I think that's why the hatred is so great.
Well, and I think that's why what is so sad about the way that the gay movement evolved, because at the beginning, it was really about trying to protect people from prejudice and protect people from losing their jobs or being evicted from their homes or beaten up simply because of something about their life. But the idea that it's an article of faith that you have to think this is biologically determined at birth, and that therefore people who just don't fit that pattern are the enemy because they somehow, through some complicated theorem, a sequence of syllogisms, by them existing, that's justifying some other kind of oppression. It got so complicated. Do you know what I'm saying? And it got so strained, and it's so unfair to people who have no ill will toward them. I mean, I think that at the very beginning, when I first started publishing about this in 2012, I really had no negative feelings towards the gay community. Now I'm pretty frustrated. Do you know what I mean? I'm pretty frustrated, and I'm angry at the way that they treated me, but I didn't have that ill will at the beginning. But it's like they make people into their enemy, and then they don't even pay attention to the real threats to them. You know, that it's so sad the way that the movement evolved. The fact that somebody was involved in homosexual relationships and then is no longer, that person's existence, the person that they found, the fact that person found happiness should not be threatening to someone. If you're healthy and if you are well-adjusted, you should not be threatened by people who live a different life from you. But I think envy is so powerful, and it's one of the devil's tools, you know, and it drives that whole hatred of ex-gays.
Yep, I think you're right, Bobby. It is complicated and it's tough. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about the progression, how things got, how bad they got at Cal State, and what led to your final, giving up your tenure. But I also want to talk about where your spiritual awakening came in the timeline here, and what God has done in your life to sort of bring a lot of thoughts together and make you the man that you are today. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Hundreds of thousands of French protesters have gathered in Paris to march in opposition to opposed same-sex marriage legislation. This comes after French President François Hollande opposed legislation that would extend the rights of marriage to same-sex couples, including the right to adopt children. Protesters argue that the law should say that every child is born to a man and a woman. The BBC reports protesters consist of many diverse groups, including political conservatives, Muslims, evangelicals, those siding with the Catholic Church, and even a few gay individuals opposed to gay marriage have shown a presence.
So it is a diverse bunch with a very, very clear message from the organizers that they don't want to be typecast as homophobes.
The protesters have also stressed that their movement is not politically or religiously driven and in no way directed at homosexuality, but rather the sanction of marriage.
All right, that was a report from Newsy back in 2013, January, and that was when France was grappling with the whole issue of adopting homosexual marriage. At the same time, you know, we were all grappling with this worldwide, but it was amazing how the French people came out in the hundreds of thousands to protest, whereas we were lucky if we could get a few thousand here in D.C. That's amazing to me. Well, my guest, Robert Oscar Lopez, a.k.a. Bobby Lopez, was in France. He went to Paris, then he spoke and he participated. And as he was a professor at Cal State Northridge, already under the gun because of his views about this issue, having told his story about being raised by a lesbian mother, and how now he's married with children, he became more an object of wrath. And I think that when he went to Paris to speak, it became even worse. Bobby, would you agree?
Yes, actually, I received an email from an administrator while I was in Paris. I went to the protest that happened in March 2013. It was a huge rally. There were over a million people there, according to the organizers. You know, they always debate the numbers. But I was the only American who spoke at that, and so I think it did catch the news somehow. But I remember the next day as I was on the train, I got a message from my administrator saying that I had violated some university policy by traveling to France, and which I was almost preposterous. I had told everyone that I was going. I was there for another academic conference at the same time, but she cited some small rule about, you know, you had to fill out this form in this portal, et cetera. And so I knew at that point it was kind of a message from the university, you know, we're watching you. We're watching where you go when you're off campus. You know, you're not, even though I didn't advertise the fact that I was a professor at that university, that was not something that I announced when I gave that speech. But it was clear that there were people off campus who were relaying information to people on campus. And then it got worse because by 2014, 2015, it became clear that it was going in two directions, that there were people on campus who were also giving information to people off campus. And so my whole life, at every turn, I was being consumed with lies. That was the ultimate thing that they used against me, was constantly lying about me. So I had to track down so many things to document, things to defend myself in the press, and I couldn't. You know, it was just, I didn't have that many waking hours in the day, and I couldn't do that and do my job and still be a good father and husband for my family. So it just all kind of broke down. But I think France was a turning point, although I don't think that it was, it didn't start with that, you know, but it definitely escalated it.
So in that same year, though, you were awarded tenure, which is the big plum for any professor. It means job security. It means that for a lifetime, you cannot be, for the most part, you can't be fired, right?
Correct, yeah. And, you know, I had lawyers, and there were all these people from the conservative movement who were really helping me to get through the tenure process. So I think at Cal State Northridge, they did not want to expose themselves to a lawsuit. So they got me through tenure, and then their plan was to just drive me out by making my life miserable as soon as I got it. So it was almost like my life was much worse for having gotten tenure, because they couldn't fire me directly. One of the things about tenure is, you know, I'm 45, so my tenure technically is worth millions of dollars because I could have worked continuously until 70, 75 years old. You know, so it becomes a huge legal liability for the university to try to deal with people who are tenured or tenure tracked. I almost feel like it would have been better if I had never been tenured and they just said, look, this is not working out. You don't meet the mission of the university, let's just part ways. I would have been happier with that than having been put through, since tenure, because I got tenure in 2013, 3 years of really a living hell. I can't describe how horrible it was when I realized the students were spying on me. There was vandalism on my door. There were people slipping threatening notes under my door. I was getting vulgar phone messages on a regular basis, emails that were really hostile. a lot of things were done anonymously or done so I couldn't tell who was saying what to when. And then there were tons of complaints that were being filed against me. So I was being investigated by the administration over and over and over again over the most ridiculous, preposterous charges. And then at the same time that they were investigating me for that, then my colleagues, the other professors, were spreading horrendous rumors, like that I was a CIA agent, that I was crazy and I was going to jump off a building. And so it escalated to the point where, I mean, I really honestly could not sustain the pressure. They were intolerable working conditions. And I stayed on because I really did feel like God had called me to that ministry to a certain sense. You know, I didn't want to abandon the Christian students who I was able to connect with and help at that university. But I just, after a lot of prayer, I felt by the spring of 2016 that God was really telling me, it's okay, you can move on now. You can let go. This is, you know, you've done what you had to do. You've served the word, and you've been a light to some people, and now you can get a break, you know?
Yeah.
But I felt very much like an Old Testament prophet. I hate to be so dramatic, but, you know, it was just horrible.
Well, I know, because I've experienced it too, where when you are trying to be faithful and you're facing a lot of different odds and you don't want to quit and you don't want to desert and you want to do what God's called you to do. And I've had God say to me, you can let go now. I've had him do that. And I've had that happen more than once. And so I can attest to God does work that way. Now, I want to read what you wrote. I think this is amazing. You wrote this article in the Daily Caller, which is not a Christian publication by a long shot. In fact, we're going to put it on our Facebook page. And this is the title of Bobby's article. It's called Abandoning Tenure to Save My Soul. And he says, I didn't want to leave without pay. I didn't want to leave with pay. I just wanted to leave. The Liberal Academy is a place full of secular activists channeling their own unhappiness into interminable hostilities against whichever conservative Christian they can find within a three-mile radius. I had served for 8 years under a dean trained in women's studies, surrounded in her executive suite by lesbians and feminists who hated me for celebrating the beauty and glory of chastity and biblical love. I could not have my relationship with Jesus Christ and this job simultaneously. The choice was not that difficult. So, Bobby, when you came, that's beautifully written and powerful. When you came to that place, you know, you've expressed to me your concern. You have a wife and at least one little girl, I believe. And that's a lot.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I have two kids.
Two kids. Yeah. And you've been so concerned about them. So when it came down, I'm assuming you talked to your wife and you guys made a joint decision as a family.
Yeah, we did. It was very hard. You know, my wife had been an academic also, and then she had left her job to be a stay-at-home mom because we wanted to give that to our children. So for several years, she had been a stay-at-home mom. And so my income was the only income. So this was very scary. But there are other opportunities that have come my way, and I've taken them. And I think that I have a good pathway to be able to provide for them. But it is scary because tenure is, and one of the things I say in that piece is that tenure is not really good for Christians because tenure gives you a kind of security and it gives you an arrogance that really gets in the way of you relying on God because it's, you know, you're chained to this one institution and you're so afraid of losing it or you're so afraid of walking away from it because everyone told you that this is the most important thing in your life and this is going to answer all your problems. That you forget sometimes that, you know, we were placed here to lean on God. We were not placed here to lean on man. And tenure is the epitome of not leaning on God. It's like you're totally just expecting the institution to solve your problems for you and to never abandon you, you know. And I don't think it's really healthy for a Christian. I think you do have to, when confronted with a situation like mine, you have to make that decision to say, you know what? This is what the Bible tells us about not being of this world, not living in this world. You have to look to what God wants. And I do think that God provides. I mean, it says in Genesis, you know, when Abraham is taking Isaac up to Mount Moriah and Isaac says, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham says, the Lord will provide. You know, the Lord will provide. He will. If you follow everything and you really follow through all your leads and you make sure that all of your bases are covered and you do everything that you can, you will find a way to provide for your family. But you can't trade away principles that are sacred and important and integral and do essentially a mediocre job just so that you can keep your employment. And this is not good.
You know, it's amazing to listen to you, Bobby, because I remember when we first began to talk, you hinted to me that you were a Christian, but you didn't really come out and speak with the boldness that you're speaking today. So I don't think I have ever asked you where that change in your life came. I don't even think I've ever asked you exactly when you became a Christian and where your maturity has come from. So what's the answer to that?
Well, I was raised as a Catholic in the liberation theology household, and it was a kind of religious viewpoint that did emphasize being kind to people and not being prejudiced and helping the poor, but it was very bad on issues of sin. And so I think for me, it took a long time for me to realize that the things that the Bible defines as sin are harmful to me and other people, and that is not what God wants from his followers. He doesn't want his people, his creations, to defile themselves, essentially, with sin. So in 2001, I had one very deep religious experience where I just felt, a strange sensation come over my body as I was praying in church. And there was a hint that I got. I heard some kind of message that was saying, you know, you're going to be going in a different direction. Things are going to be really different here. Soon, you know, keep an eye out for the road changing. And then I found a Baptist church in 2008, and I became a Baptist, and I was baptized then. And that was right at the point where I was starting my job at Cal State Northridge. So really my conversion happened, and I think God really called me to that place. That was the place where I was going to be initiated by fire, you know, and I feel like I fulfilled what he asked me to do. And now I'm going to move on to, situations where I can be a lot more open about my religious beliefs, and I can be bolder, because I think the job was holding me back a lot. I was always afraid, every time I gave an interview, I was always afraid of having to go to work and deal with the backlash if I spoke too openly about the fact that I was really being driven by my Christian beliefs.
You know, Bobby, I've said this, forgive me for those of you listening who've heard me say this, but it's important. I had the privilege of traveling a lot overseas and meeting with Christians who were in the underground church, whether it was Russia or China or Vietnam. I was in North Korea. I've been really a lot of places. And one of the things that I heard from Christians who were being outright persecuted in their countries, fined, imprisoned, terrible beatings, unbelievable things. One of the themes that I heard was it was when they stopped being afraid that they felt free. And that they experienced joy, just joy to be free. And
yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, it felt so good to be able to publish that thing in the Daily Caller, which, as you said, is not necessarily a Christian publication. But it felt good that they published it right away, too. I mean, so they were supportive of it. But to be able to say, you know, this really was because I was given a choice to choose God or my job. And that's a terrible choice to be in, but that's the way God works. There are moments in your life when he basically gives you a choice like that. You can choose slavery or you can choose freedom. So, you know.
Yeah. So, you know. Bobby, what are you going to do next? I mean, can you tell us, or is that something you can't speak about yet?
I can't speak about it just yet. I have a good opportunity. I'm going to continue writing, and I'm going to continue researching the things that I'm doing. I'm going to be doing things in a much more religious context. So I will be continuing it.
All right. All right. So right now, if people want to read your stuff, do you still do English Maniff, the blog?
Yeah, that blog is still up. And from that blog, you can get to the books and you can get to the podcast. So I'm doing a podcast series. We're up to 42 episodes of the podcast where I interview different people. I've interviewed Scott Lively. I've interviewed Brian Kaminsker, many of the people that you know, too. So all of that work can be found on that blog.
Okay. So English Maniff, we'll put that on our Facebook page. But I'd like to sort of ask you a couple of questions that aren't related to your personal situation right now, just your perspective, because you always have a very interesting perspective on things. Recently, we had this terrible, horrendous terrorist attack in a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, Bobby, and so many gay men, and I guess lesbians, I don't know. It's mostly men at this point in our timeline were just brutally murdered by an Islamist. And I just, you know, as I reflect on that, I think of the coupling of Islamophobia and homophobia as though there are such things, and as though if there were, they are the same thing. And I'm curious to know what your response to that would be, and what you think the response of the homosexual community will be to that terrorist act in regard to Islam itself.
Well, the first reaction I had is just, as someone who has been attacked and threatened at my job, the fact that the gay community feels so besieged and the way that they must feel right now is so attacked and vulnerable and scared and angry, you know, and I grieve for the fact that people have to feel that way, that people have to feel targeted and singled out, and just the loss of life. It's horrible. Part of me wants to put away all of the politics and just really drive home, especially people who don't have a lot of experience with the gay community, that regardless of whether the sexual acts are sins, it is a culture, it's a community, it's a social network of people who do many things with each other that are not sexual. You know, they're friends with each other, they comfort each other, they help each other find jobs, and they do love each other.
There's no question about it. Bobby, we have to take a commercial break, but when we come back, I want you to let you finish your comments on that, because I really do want to know what you think. Bobby Lopez, Robert Oscar Lopez is our guest, and again, you can get his writing on English Manif, M-A-N-I-F. Blogspot, English Man of Blogspot. We're going to take a break and come right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you, and it's my pleasure to have Bobby Lopez, Robert Oscar Lopez, a professor, he was, at Cal State Northridge in literature. He is a great thinker. He's got his PhD in English Lit and does a lot of writing, but he also is a man who was in the gay lifestyle, also was married by a lesbian mother. He's now living as a straight man with two children. He has had a rebirth in Christ, I would say. And as a result of that, his experience at Cal State Northridge just became untenable. And that's what he's written about in this article in the Daily Caller, which we're going to put on our Facebook page, called Abandoning Tenure to Save My Soul. And we will link that on our Facebook page so that you can read the whole story. But before we took the break, Bobby, we were discussing this recent just slaughter at the gay nightclub in Orlando, where 50-plus were killed and many, many, many more injured, just that many and more injured. And because of your writing and your relationships, your love of the gay community, your love of your mother who was a lesbian, I do want to know more about what you think about the implications are going to be on the gay community of that horrendous act.
Well, as I was saying before the break, my first response is just the grief over the loss and the fact that it's terrible that these divisions in our country have become so violent, and that anyone, any community full of you know, everything, the good and the bad, any community having to live under that kind of pressure is terrible. The next thing I would say is the LGBT community has got to get new leadership. The Human Rights Campaign, GLAAD, Lambda Legal, the gay wing of the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center, these people have been criminally negligent. They took it upon themselves to protect the gay community and to fight for gay rights. They wasted 30 years on going after people like you and me. I am listed as the number two most dangerous homophobe on the Human Rights Campaign's Exported Hate List, which they published in 2014, which is beyond ridiculous. In the aftermath of a shooting in which 50 people were killed at a gay nightclub in Orlando, they have got to get new leadership. This whole weird obsession among the people who are leaders or who have self-appointed themselves leaders of the gay community, their obsession with fighting with Christian conservatives and fighting with the Republican Party and advancing the interests of the Democrats is simply, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just pure opportunism. I don't know if it's just they've all been paid off, but it's clearly ineffective, and it's now backfiring because they completely dropped the ball on the biggest threat facing them, which is domestic terrorism. And this kind of lack of security across the board in the country is going to affect gay people disproportionately. So that's the second thing, is that they really have got to find new leaders. I think that if there was an ounce of integrity in a lot of those leaders, the Human Rights Campaign and GLAAD, they should just disband. They should literally resign from what they've been doing, because they have wasted their donors' money and gay people's time on fighting against the wrong people, people who are not their enemy.
To even expand it further, Bobby, that when you said domestic terrorism, that's probably not the word you mean. You mean radical Islamic terrorism on our soil, because domestic terrorism is the phrase they use for, there was a report that came out not long after that shooting about some guy at the gay pride parade in LA who was arrested. He said he was coming to the parade. He was trying to find someone. He was knocking on various doors, so they arrested him. This is all the information that I have. They go to his car, and they find out he has some weapons in his car. So they immediately publish this report as though it is, and he's from Indiana. So immediately they just shout this from the housetops as though, somebody from Indiana happens to have guns in his car at the gay pride parade in L.A. is equivalent to this murderer, this Islamic murderer who just slaughtered and yelled Allahu Akbar and swore a pledge of allegiance to ISIS, who hates gay men, who throws them off buildings, who thinks they should die. That's not the same thing. And so...
I know. But they've lost all sense of proportionality. And that's one of the fears that strikes on behalf of you and on behalf of people like me, because I'm on their watch list. So I don't want to be blamed or be falsely accused of being involved in those kinds of things. They need to go after the real enemies, which is, I think, Islamic terrorism is a much bigger threat for them, internationally as well.
Well, there's no question about that. And so we just have to keep, and of course, AFA is one of the hate groups listed by Southern Poverty Law Center. And of course, I'm the target myself, Bobby. I guess, it is absolutely a lie. It is a lie. I have to say that people that speak, I've said this many times, I will repeat it, people who really care about you speak the truth to you. They don't pat you on the head and say that all of your bad behavior, dangerous behavior, harmful behavior is fine. That's not a person who loves you. A loving parent doesn't do that to you. A loving parent says, they slap your hand and say, don't touch, because it will burn you. And so that's, I think, this is the common sense that's being lost in this whole debate.
Right.
Bobby, on the issue, I know that this is not your issue, but on the latest dust-up that's related to the LGBT world is the transgender bathroom dressing argument. How do you think, are you surprised yourself? I remember when the transgender movement was distanced from the radical homosexual movement because they didn't think that the mainstream American public would never embrace, cross-dressing men and queens and you fill in the blanks. But now it's amazing to me how quickly that's come into the fold and become mainstream even through the executive branch of our government.
Lord, I think it's just there's some kind of economic model of what, I think there are a lot of activist groups that were set up and they raise money by sending letters to their donors saying, you have to fund us because there's some huge battle coming up. And they won gay marriage, and they basically won gay adoption. And so they need something to keep their bills paid, ultimately. And that kind of feeds into the last thing I said, that ultimately, I think these people have been very negligent, because all of these legislations and all of these sort of superficial issues that really don't affect the lives of the vast majority of gay people, who are just people. I don't, the fact that they're gay doesn't really matter. They're human beings who need to get by in life, and they want to be able to have a good job and have a good life. They're not being helped by any of these efforts. I mean, what percentage of the population is really going to have to worry about being a teenager and having to go into a girl's locker room when you're a boy because you're identified as transgender? It's a very small percentage of the population. So I think it's wasteful and it's inefficient, but to explain why it has become such a rage, I think it's just there's such a huge machine of public relations officers and advocates and analysts and commentators, and they need to keep their industry going. And so transgenderism is the next thing to do since they won everything else.
Bobby, coming back to your academic experience, we talk a lot here about the loss of academic freedom on college campuses. In fact, let me just stop to play a clip. This may be familiar to you. Missouri, University of Missouri, which has been one of the finest journalism schools in the country for decades, really. That's what his reputation is. And so ironic that suddenly they should be the center of the war, really, on free speech on campus. This is a report from KRBK, Fox 5 in Missouri. Let's listen.
Missouri State University students have seen their fair share of protests and demonstrations on campus, but they've always been confined to three designated speech areas. But now that all may change. The Campus Free Expression Act was signed into law earlier this year by Governor Jay Nixon, which required public colleges and universities consider all outdoor areas on campus as platforms for free speech. Outside groups were usually restricted to sidewalks and three public forum zones on campus. Students shared their opinion with us on the issue.
If you have protesters anywhere on campus, they could create problems for people getting to back and to and from class or for the bear line getting through.
We also have classes that come outside sometimes if the weather's nice. You can't really have a class outside if you have protesters just walking around everywhere, you know, yelling or just protesting.
I don't feel that they should be limited to a certain area as long as they abide by all the rules.
I think with their current system of having certain areas, they're able to still have people say whatever their opinions are about whatever they believe, and students are able to hear that information without affecting student flow and harassment.
The policy was focused on providing an open discussion, but many students and faculty remain skeptical of the potential change.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have to laugh because it's so absolutely ridiculous. While professors like Bobby are being shut up and really, you know, ousted out of their universities and their positions and ridiculed, it's the same thing as happening to students. Were you seeing that at Cal State Northridge also, Bobby, where students were not free to say what they actually thought?
Well, we didn't. The thing about it is that there were so few students that I saw while I was there who actually stood up to the consensus. There were almost none, and I think that's because the university was so successful at just nipping it in the bud. I mean, they really cut off any institutional means. You know, you can't get funding, you can't get approval for your events. So they managed to stifle any opposition really in the early stages. So I didn't really hear students voice strong opposition to the liberal mainstream. But I can say from my own experience that, you know, you don't have freedom, because what ends up happening is the provost or whichever office responds to inquiries about my case, they always give the same statement, which is that we believe in academic freedom and we also believe in providing an environment free of harassment, discrimination, or retaliation, which is ironic because I was completely subject to harassment, discrimination, and retaliation, and they did nothing about it. They were part of it, you know, and I don't think that you can have those two statements at the same time. You can't have a term like harassment, which is defined so arbitrarily so that it fits some people under certain circumstances, but then it doesn't protect other people under other circumstances. And then at the same time, say that you have academic freedom, because the people in power are constantly deciding based on what they want, what is free speech and what is not free speech. So it's not free speech. It's like speech that is licensed and controlled by the people running the university.
Bobby, did any student stand out to you as someone who came forward and in their own way, to whatever level, came to your defense without naming names?
I mean, I think there were a couple who maybe were thinking of it, but they were too scared. They were too scared. Nobody came to my defense. I have to be honest with you.
Not even professors?
None. The Christians on campus, I know that they're there. They have meetings, but none of them would speak up. None of them would stand out. I mean, I was utterly, completely alone. I had help from people off campus, which was good, and I had, you know, readers who were supporting me, but I was literally just a man completely alone, surrounded by a mob every day. So, and I'm just glad that I'm moving on to something else.
So Bobby, when you were in the real heat of it, toward the end of it, and when things were so becoming intolerable, are you in a prayer group? Do you have a pastor that talks with you? Is your own private devotional life powerful? I mean, what was sustaining you?
My church. I belong to a wonderful Southern Baptist church here in California, and they really were there for me the entire time. And the other people that were there for me were my union. And I know that sometimes conservatives don't like unions, but the union was very good You know, they stuck by me the entire way, even though everybody else pretty much abandoned me. Now, the union was mostly interested in this as a racial discrimination case, but, you know, at least they were dutiful to me, and they stood by my side.
Yeah, so, all right. And in just some interesting news that has just come out of Europe after all of your involvement, and I know you still are involved in the overseas battle on the issue of gay marriage, that the European Union has just decided to reserve marriage to a man and woman, or at least to say that it's not discriminatory if a country wants to reserve marriage between a man and a woman. Did that surprise you?
Well, I knew that that was always going to be a tough thing because we hear a lot about France and England and Ireland and, you know, Western Europe, but the European Union includes all of those Eastern European countries which are very conservative and about marriage and which have passed many referendums blocking male-female marriage. So I knew that that was coming down the pike. I have to say that when I was in Europe in 2013, I saw sort of the oncoming change that we saw in America a couple of years later with the Trump the Trump candidacy, where there were just a lot of people who felt completely abandoned by the system. They felt abandoned by their religious leaders, and they were really being drawn to ground movements that were led by people who might not agree with them, even on religion, but they just felt that at the very least, these were people who were going to fight. And so they were being drawn to some of those movements. It was a little bit scary there, it is a little bit scary here, but I could see that coming down the pike. And I think that's part of the reason why you're seeing the EU not necessarily endorsing gay marriage unequivocally, because we didn't hear about it much in the U.S., but the backlash over gay marriage in England and France was pretty powerful.
Well, it's
in terms of the people who opposed it. Yeah,
the whole world is in turmoil. It's groaning, I think, for the coming of the Savior. I just have to say that. And Bobby, we appreciate your part in this battle. And I'm proud of you, if I could say that, silly as it sounds. Englishmanif.blogspot.com. Pray for Bobby and his family. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.